Morning, everybody. I want to speak to you for a minute about the reading that we just heard from the first book of Samuel. Really, the beginning of this whole part of the history of Israel. So I'm associated with an Anglican monastic community. It's the order of, Society of St. John the Evangelist. It's the oldest post-Reformation Anglican men's community of monks. And so they've been at this for a long time. These guys have not lived just a cloistered life. They've really lived throughout the world, often in very dangerous and very impoverished circumstances to them. So they've just kind of lived away a peaceful life. Their initial name was the Priests Evangelists of St. John, which kind of shows the attitude that they had. So they would set up communities in India and South Africa and all kind of places, and have had a lot of influence in ways we're not even aware of. But anyway, so during the pandemic, these guys who have been around for a long time have had to kind of adapt their ministry, because people can't come into the monastery and they can't really go out. So one of the things they started to do is this kind of internet thing, which they say they really resisted at first. It kind of just goes against their whole spirit of things, but it's been kind of quite successful in a lot of ways. So one of the things that they do is, once every couple of months, sometimes once a month, they'll get together the people who are the associates, that is people who are like myself, who are, associate with the monastery, and as much as possible, try to keep parts of their rule, monastic rule, that kind of thing. And they get them together, and they learned how to do this through Zoom. A couple of the brothers, they'll give a little talk. One will give a talk. The other will respond, the other give a talk, the other respond, and then they'll kind of joke with each other. It's surprising what sense of humor these monks have. But they've had to learn two things. We've all had to learn lots of things during Zoom. They've had to learn two things in particular. One is the importance of the mute button, and the other is the importance of that they can see what the comment button is. And it's not because they're bossy. It's for the benefit of those who are watching. So, for example, the benefit of the mute button was last year during the American election. And I just want to see a little bit more of you guys. There you go. Last year during the American election, a bit of a fight started to break out between some of the associates about how they felt about the American election, and the brothers very quickly, very politely shut that down. The other thing is, and this happened last time, is in the comments at the bottom, and people ask them questions, and they start to ask comments, which are quite legitimate, that went something like this. Every time we turn on the news, there are more and more disasters. What can we do about the disasters in the world? And the brothers gave really reasonable answers, because they're very concerned themselves and they do what they can. But I get the sense that they were being asked more and more questions. And I also get the sense that it was probably people from like me. And that is people who spend a little too much time paying attention to what someone has called the news of the day. That is the various catastrophes that the media present to each day. I mean, not that there aren't lots of catastrophes, but it's pretty selective what's presented to us, I think. And then, it's kind of like a week later, you're going, yeah, I wonder what happened to that horrible catastrophe. And then, they're on to the next thing. So they seem to be getting a lot of these questions. And finally, one of the, a bunch of people, probably again like me, who are kind of all stirred up from overstimulation, from constantly checking the news. And finally, one of the brothers, an English brother who is probably his late 40s, said, you know, God has given each one of us, as the psalm says, our own fair acre. And sometimes the best thing that we can do for the healing of the world is to care for our own fair acre that God has given us. That is the particular responsibilities that, not saying we should learn about the world, but he's saying, I heard somebody put it like this. There's no change. It was a priest. He was talking about his parish, but applies broadly. There's no change in a parish that does not begin with a change in me. So he seemed to be saying, you know, we need to attend to the catastrophes of the world. One of the most effective things we can do is to attend to the, I won't say the catastrophe of ourselves, but to what's been given to us. The reason I think of this is that today we have, while I was reading through, I was thinking about this, and I was thinking about today's reading, and I read a quote from one of the brothers, and it goes like this, and this is the point, really. The founders of our order inspire us to be indifferent to celebrity and success, and to trust the power of hidden prayer. So the reason I think of this is that if you were to say, I isolate, for example, a place in history, an event in history that has had really consequential effect, one of the places that you would point to is this story that we have in 1 Samuel today. The story is this, that has this dramatic effect. Story is this. There's a woman, Hannah. She goes to the shrine. She is someone who is a very low social regard, because in this traditional clan-based society, that still secretly worship the fertility goddess, the one thing that gave you value as a woman was fertility. And if you didn't do that, and you know, you weren't worshiping the fertility goddess, which is kind of the technology of the time, and if you were not producing offspring for your clan, you were kind of letting down the team, and that means that you were in a position of isolation. So here's the odd thing. This woman is quite isolated. She's in the temple by herself. Really, the only person that she has that seems to support her is her husband, Elkanah, who is called a righteous man. Sometimes it's translated as one man, which means that he's a man of integrity. But she is completely outside the news cycle of the day. She's completely, really is a kind of person who's completely irrelevant. But we need to be aware of something very unusual that she is doing. And that is, in a society in which all prayer is public prayer, the unusual thing that she is doing is, despite her low social status, despite or even because of her isolation, and despite the temptations to pray to the fertility goddess, she goes into the shrine at Shiloh. And what we see is an example of her deep inwardness, her secret, silent, private prayer. In fact, this is such an unusual thing that the priest Levi can't even recognize what she's doing. This kind of inward, this deeply inward prayer is something that the priest Eli can't even understand. You think she's drunk or something. But out of this prayer, which is a very unusual way to pray at the time, we may see this perhaps as the first example of a truly inward secret prayer in the Old Testament. Out of this secret prayer of this insignificant, ostracized, we might say, woman, we have one of the beginning of a series of events that we still live with today. That is, out of her prayer comes the birth of her son, Samuel, a Nazarite. Samuel anoints David. Jesus is the descendant of the Messiah. And, you know, history has not been the same since. So think about this very insignificant woman. And the most significant, the most powerful thing she has done is this inwardness and this secret prayer that she demonstrates. The brothers, as I said, are not suggesting hiding away. Like I said, they have been all over the world, placed themselves at all kinds of risk over the last century and a half. But they continue to commit themselves to this principle. And that is, as I said, there's no change in a parish. There's no change in a community. There's no change in the world that does not begin with a change in me. And the beginning of that change in me is the growth and the power of that hidden prayer. So I ask myself as I read this, what's this have to do with me? And how can I put this into effect? First of all, I would like to plead guilty. I am one of those people who is addicted to the news of the day. I could listen to the news 5,000 times a day and not stop. It's kind of like, I don't want to call it an addiction, but it's kind of like, I'm really, really interested in this and really kind of wound up by it. But I realize that in a sense, one of the things that does, it propagandizes me not to attend to the life of my own soul. It says to me, all the problems in the world are huge, they're inexplicable, they're unsolvable, and therefore, implicitly, you should just kind of give up, except listen for the news, next news broadcast. So you can find out how truly hopeless things are. And I'm kind of an addict to that. So for me, I think one of the things that I can learn to do is simply turn off the news of the day, attend to my own soul, and believe in the power of secret prayer, that it is real and it is significant, and sometimes history changing. Secondly, we get a lot of the news, as anybody who's worked in journalism knows, a lot of the news that we are presented really has been sorted out before it's presented to us. We'll talk about this thing, we don't talk about that thing. For example, the war in Ethiopia that was just mentioned earlier, we don't hear about it an awful lot, but it's a truly horrendous thing. One of the things that I can do is through my own private prayer and through reading of the Bible, I can be provided with a pair of glasses that will help me see the world much clearly and sometimes much more clearly than what is presented to me through the news of the day. So I can take time, put aside the distractions, and I can put on the real glasses that are going to help me understand what's really going on. The third thing is, I can actually learn to trust in prayer. I think maybe sometimes the reason a person might listen obsessively to the news of the day maybe is that we think there's nothing we can do, and that means we've forgotten the power of private prayer. The famous reform theologian Karl Barth said this: hands folded in prayer are a protest against the disorder of the world. They are more than a protest against the disorder of the world. They also are a potent and secret and powerful action through which God will transform the world. The power of our private prayer, as we saw in Hannah. Isn't it remarkable? Think about this. Isn't it remarkable that we know the name of an isolated, irrelevant, socially ostracized, low status woman from 3,000 years ago? And the reason we know of her is because the power of her inner life and the secret and powerful effectiveness of her private prayer and the fruit that bore. So let's consider that. Prayer is not let's not be overwhelmed by the news of the day. Let's not let it interfere with our prayer life. Let's let our prayer and our reading of scripture affect how we understand the world. And let's realize that our prayer is powerful in ways that we could not conceivably imagine. Amen.